gangling man, but he lashed out with arms and feet so that it took both of the younger men considerable strength to subdue him. Allardyce tried to shout, and the taller agent slammed his hand over their captive's mouth, at which the professor promptly bit him.
"Like trying to wrestle an anaconda," one grunted. "A sack full of anacondas," from the other.
But gradually, they had their victim under control, dragging him, still kicking, to the car, where the bigger agent pushed Allardyce into the rear, chopping the back of his neck viciously with the edge of his hand. The professor folded, slumping into a corner while his captor climbed in, positioning himself in readiness should he regain consciousness. With the second man at the wheel, the car turned out of the driveway and within a few minutes was on the road leading away from Victoria into wooded countryside. Professor Robert Allardyce was no fool. At the age of 71, he had experienced much, both in his special field of maritime electronics and in life itself. During World War II, he had distinguished himself in the United States Navy, had 2 ships sunk under him, and had been awarded the Navy Cross. He had ended the war in the submarine service, and, for a short time during training, before getting his coveted Dolphins, Commander Allardyce had been a member of the Navy boxing team. The chop to his neck had plunged the professor into semi-consciousness, but by the time the car was out on the main road, he was aware of everything that was going on. His neck ached from the blow, and he figured that it would be stiff and sore if and when he tried to move. He remained lying against the left door, inert, but with all his senses gradually coming into play again. Far better to feign unconsciousness now and take advantage of his situation later. They drove for 15 minutes or so, and Allardyce had time to brace himself for a move as the vehicle slowed to a stop.
"They're not here yet," one of the agents said. "We're 10 minutes ahead of time. Don't get out. Stay where you are." "He okay?" "The prof, out like a light. He'll stay in dreamland for another half hour or so."
As he prepared to move, Allardyce noted that both men spoke more like native Californians than local Canadians. Then he sprang, arching his body, grabbing for the door handle, lashing out with his feet, which connected with the body of the man who had hit him. Then he was out of the car and running, hardly realizing that he was among trees and undergrowth. Behind him there was a shout which sounded like, "No, no, no!" He did not hear the 2 shots. Just a sudden, blinding pain between his shoulder blades and a punch like some huge fist which seemed to go right through his body. Then a great white light and endless oblivion. 2. The mind is the man. Eventually, the autopsy on Robert Allardyce would give cause of death as deep trauma resulting from the spinal cord and left lung being penetrated by 2.45 bullets. But at the moment those bullets hit the unfortunate professor, James Bond was sitting only some 5 miles away, in the opulent Palm Court lounge of the Empress Hotel on Victoria's pleasant waterfront. People who knew Bond well would have noticed that his manner and expression were ones of disapproval, the eyes hard and restless, his face frozen into the look of someone who has just been served bad fish. In fact, Bond was irritated by the way this old and famous hotel served what it called an English tea. During his 4 days in Victoria, Bond had avoided taking tea at the hotel, but today he had played 2 rounds of golf with indifferent partners at the Victoria Golf Club and returned earlier than usual. Tea seemed to be in order, and he was shown to a small table hard by a massive potted plant. The first thing that annoyed him was a card on which was printed a highly inaccurate history of what it called the English tea ritual. This claimed that, at some time in the late 19th century, tea had become a serious meal called high tea. Happily, Bond reflected that while he could still recall the delights of nursery tea, he had never been in a position to eat high tea. But here he was being asked to believe that the fare set before him was high tea. An indifferent brew of tea itself, strawberries and cream, finger sandwiches, tasteless petit fours, and some abomination called a honey crumpet. Crumpets, to Bond, were delicious items which should be served piping hot and dripping with butter, not jam, marmalade, or this sweet confection of honey. He left the meal barely tasted, signed the bill and strolled away past the main restaurant, heading for the lobby. He would take a walk, he thought, along the harbour